Brian Lehrer, WNYC. Good morning, everyone. The Republicans who debated on ABC yesterday might have agreed with each other on most of the issues, but there was still a lot to learn from them. We learned that John McCain thinks abortion is a national security issue.
I think that the respect and commitment to the rights of the unborn is something I've fought for, and it has a lot to do with national security. It says very much what kind of a country we are and our respect for human life, whether it be here in the United States or whether it be in China or Bangladesh or the Congo or any place else in the world.
So we learned that from McCain. We learned that Rudy Giuliani thinks democracy building does not begin with elections.
A democracy also requires the rule of law, requires stability. It requires people not being afraid they're going to be killed every day when they go out on the street. Democracy is only a theory if you're living in an unstable situation. So sometimes democracy is the long-term goal, but in order to get there, you have to first build a rule of law. You have to first build respect for human rights.
So we learned that from Rudy, and we learned that Mitt Romney is still refining his language on his pro-choice past.
I never said I was pro-choice, but my position was effectively pro-choice. I've said that time and time again. I changed my position. When I was governor and when I faced an issue of life or death, when the first time a bill came to my desk that related to the life of an unborn child, I came down on the side of life.
So let's see, he wasn't really pro-choice, but he was effectively pro-choice, but he never said he was pro-choice, and then he changed his stance to be against choice. Okay. And we learned just how wrong Congressman Ron Paul thinks the Iraq war really is.
Just come home. We just marched in. We can just come home. We went in there illegally. We did not declare war. It's lasting way too long. We didn't declare war in Korea or Vietnam. The wars were never really ended. We lose those wars. We're losing this one. We shouldn't be there. We ought to just come home.
We'll hear a lot more from the candidates in the next few minutes and get reactions from two guests and from you. We're opening the phones. First priority today, two Republicans likely to vote in the Republican primaries. If you are a Republican likely to vote in the Republican primaries and you watch the ABC This Week debate moderated by George Stephanopoulos yesterday or listen to it on WNYC, thanks to ABC for giving us radio rights. We aired it here last night. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And joining us now are Ruben Navarrete, syndicated columnist with the Washington Post Writers Group and an editorial board member for the San Diego Union-Tribune, and Rick Klein, who is a senior political reporter at ABC News. He also edits their online political newsletter, The Note, at abcnews.com, which has some interesting analysis of the debate. So, Rick and Ruben, thanks for coming on WNYC today. Good morning.
Good to be here.
Thanks, Brian.
Rick, this was your guys' debate. What's your headline?
I think Romney went in the front runner and he left the front runner. He definitely had some interesting moments on abortion, a couple of which you just discussed. But I did think it was telling that he wasn't quite as defensive as he'd been in the past on it. He was pretty strident in his descriptions and just said, look, I changed my mind. I'm not going to apologize for it anymore. And I'm a little sick and tired, he said to Sam Brownback, of those who are holier than thou because they were pro-life for longer than I was.
Holier than thou was an interesting choice of words, Ruben, yes?
Yes, indeed, yeah. I was surprised when he said that. And I've always thought Romney was very good in these kinds of forums. I think he's very slick, but I don't think that's a compliment. I don't think he comes across as believing what he's saying. And I think the more I hear from folks and read what folks are writing about Romney, performances like the one last night sort of reinforce that. It's sort of the opposite of straight talk when you have to sort of approach an issue like abortion with so much nuance and debate exactly who was pro-life first. There's just other, and then on immigration and other issues, he's likewise tried to sort of have his cake and eat it too, and I don't think that's coming across very well with voters.
So, Rick, maybe he came in first and left first, at least in Iowa, I guess is what you're referring to, right? Giuliani's not running in Iowa. McCain is not running in Iowa, correct?
At least not in the straw poll next weekend, which is the first thing that people are looking at. Both Giuliani and McCain say that they're in Iowa. They haven't given the full out commitment to it. And I think if things are looking bleak for them, they may further pull back. But Romney is running first in the polls, and ABC Washington Post poll over the weekend in Iowa. He's also running first in New Hampshire. So even though he's only fourth in some of the national polls, you've got to consider him the front runner at this point, in my opinion.
But it's not simply that he used to be pro-choice and now isn't anymore. Candidates do change on things. But the way he was trying to tweak the language yesterday struck me as, you know, just really, really slick and not believable, because he said, "I never said I was pro-choice."
Yeah,
and
that,
then,
I mean,
went,
that's,
then went on to say, but he was effectively pro-choice. But then I changed my position. So I never said I was pro-choice, but then I changed my position to be pro-life. I mean, what?
I agree with you, Brian. I think that's one turn too many for any kind of a productive response. I think his campaign realizes that he is on the record in a pro-choice position during his run for the Senate in 1994, during his run for governor in 2002. In his first year, 2 years as governor, he was a pro-choice politician and really wouldn't dispute that label. He has decided on this issue, along with issues of gay rights and gun rights, that he is moving right, and he's got to just trust and hope that people believe that it's a genuine conversion. There's a lot of skepticism out there, but I think it's in some ways a measure of how dissatisfied Republicans are with the rest of the field that they're willing to look at someone who's certainly has questionable credentials on core conservative issues. Rudy Giuliani's positions are far to the left of Mitt Romney on social issues. John McCain would have a real decent chance if his campaign wasn't in freefall right now.
And Ruben Navarrete, how about one of the other clips? McCain equating abortion with national security. What did you think of that?
I thought he's working too hard. I miss the old McCain. You know, I miss the straight talk of 8 years ago. I think he is trying too hard, not unlike Romney, to say what people want to hear. And I think it was a stretch. I almost, because I know McCain, I've covered him when I was covering politics in Arizona. I almost felt that as the words were coming out of his mouth, he was regretting it, thinking, oh no, here I go. You know, he's becoming the thing that he criticizes the most. And I don't think that's the place you want to be. I don't buy this idea that Romney's a front runner at all. I think he's got a great organization to his credit. And he's going to do well in New Hampshire because he comes from neighboring Massachusetts. But I think you have to give Giuliani his credit. Those polls are real. I think Giuliani's been out in front all along. He's still out in front.
On Giuliani's answer, the one that we played, and we'll get to more of each of them, most of them in the forum yesterday agreed that they would not continue President Bush's policy of putting democracy at the center of U.S. foreign policy. That, to me, was one of the most interesting things about this debate, Rick. They all kind of went where Giuliani went there, which is to say, before you can just go to elections, and of course they don't like the outcomes with Hamas and some of the elections that have actually been held, but they say, Giuliani said, before you go to elections, first you have to build a rule of law, first you have to build respect for human rights. But this came after George Stephanopoulos had played a clip of President Bush from his second State of the Union address, where he said democracy, spreading democracy, is the heart of U.S. foreign policy for him. And they all walked away from that.
I think you're right. It's an interesting moment. They were all looking for ways to distance themselves from President Bush without being too out in front over it. President Bush has some popularity still with the Republican base, as does the Iraq War. So we didn't see these candidates run for the hills on the question of Iraq. They all, other than Ron Paul, said they continue to support the president's strategy and hoping that the troop surge would work. I, for one, thought Mitt Romney would begin to distance himself more. He did not do that at yesterday's debate. But I do think they wanted to find areas where they could find some fault with what Bush has done, because even among his core supporters, there's people that say, you know, this guy hasn't been everything he was cracked up to be. So, yes, it was an interesting moment, and they all took it in the same direction of, we've got to be stronger, we have to take the fight to the terrorists. I mean, even going as far in one of their cases, Tom Tancredo standing by what he'd say about his threat to bomb Muslim holy sites as a deterrent against Islamic terrorists.
Yeah, we'll play that clip later. Ruben, The thing that struck me, and it wasn't stated by any of them, but it was kind of implied, when Giuliani, for example, says that you have to put the rule of law before elections to build democracy. The problem, if you look at the history, is that, you know, the strong arm, unlawful rule of law or unlawful rule in places like Saudi Arabia and Egypt and Pakistan are what the United States has a history of supporting in many strategically important countries, with no democracy and without pushing for internal democracy. Bush talked about changing that. So I wonder if Giuliani and the others weren't kind of purposely conflating the two.
I think that's true. And I think, you know, it's a balancing act, right? I mean, you need the military solution. You need the political solution. You need to have a democracy in place so eventually you can pull out and leave the democracy there to function. So that's what we're struggling with. You know, how much of each do we need? But I think this is really not about Bush at all. I think that series of questions was about the Democrats and about going after Barack Obama in particular, because Barack Obama, in my opinion, to his credit, laid out a really clear foreign policy agenda the week before, actually a few days before the debate. And I think that people were responding to that. Clearly, when I was listening to this debate, I heard a lot of attacks on Democrats, a lot of attacks, attempts to belittle Obama. So I have to say that Obama won last night because, if anything, he sort of pulled out from the pack. He becomes now somebody that the Republicans are attacking, which is only going to help him with Democrats. If you're a hardcore Democrat and you look at the debate last night, you're thinking, man, the person they're afraid of is Obama.
Because of Obama's recent series of statements, which put him somewhat on the defensive, actually, within the Democratic
right.
establishment, having to do with negotiating
right.
with enemy leaders with no preconditions in his first year in office, attacking inside Pakistan to get Osama bin Laden if they know where he is and the Pakistanis won't do it, and then promising not to use nuclear weapons in that pursuit,
right.
but then kind of fumfering and walking away from it. So maybe they just found Rick, what do you think about that? Did this indicate that they were afraid of Obama, or that they found him an easy target right now as representative of Democrats?
I'm going with the latter. I mean, I didn't find his foreign policy speeches particularly coherent. I do think he was answering particular political questions of the day in both of the different pieces that he put out there, but I don't see him. He hasn't done really to date anything that would tie it together as a coherent narrative other than I'm different than Bush, and I don't know that that really plays. I do think that in one sense, this is the arrival of Barack Obama. If he is enough of a player in both the Democratic and the Republican field that he has major candidates responding to him, that's sort of significant. He became the Democratic boogeyman instead of Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton was barely mentioned, and Barack Obama was mentioned by almost all of them.
Yeah, yesterday. Isn't that interesting?
And I thought that was an interesting point. But I don't know that it's necessarily that they're afraid of him as much as he teed something up that was really too good to pass up if you're a Republican.
Yeah, and they're running against each other right now, the Republicans, and so they want to look the most effectively anti-Democrat. We saw Giuliani do it by calling the Democrats' approach to health care socialist, and we saw Romney do it by taking the swipe at Obama that he took. We'll play that clip, actually, in a little while. But I want to get to the health care issue right now, which I also thought was really interesting in this debate. You know, we're so used to hearing Democrats debate how they would change the health care system because it's considered a Democratic issue. And funny enough, it's not something that comes up so explicitly in Republican debates. So I'm glad ABC brought it up and made them focus on it. And if you're just joining us, folks, my guest, as we play clips from yesterday's ABC News This Week Republican presidential candidates debate, my guest Rick Klein, senior political reporter at ABC News. He also edits their online political newsletter, The Note, and Ruben Navarrete Jr., syndicated columnist with the Washington Post Writers Group. As I say, it was very unlike the way the Democrats debated health care in most of their debates. So here's a montage of candidates in this order: Mike Huckabee, Tommy Thompson, Rudy Giuliani, and Sam Brownback. Huckabee first.
I got a solution. Either give every American the same kind of health care that Congress has, or make Congress have the same kind of health care that every American has. They'll get it fixed.
We've got a sickness, illness, and disease society. We spend 90% of $2 trillion, ladies and gentlemen. That's 16% of the gross national product on getting people well after they get sick. Less than 10% of the money keeping you out of the hospital, out of the nursing home. Does anybody in America think that's a smart idea? I think it's dumb. Let's go to wellness and prevention.
They're taking us towards socialized medicine. If we want the kind of results they have in England or France or Canada or Cuba, like Michael Moore wants us to do, then we should go in that direction. But that would be a terrible thing to do. What we should do is increase the number of people who have private insurance. In order to do that, we should give them a major tax deduction.
The piece of it that I think you have to recognize is that you've got a fundamental decision to make here. On health care, which is 16% of the economy, going north fast, probably headed to 20% of our total economy, do you think the solution of providing more and better health care is one that we should have more government solutions involved, Or should it be more market-based solutions involved? And I think clearly the answer here is you need more market forces in healthcare.
Sam Brownback at the end of that montage. And Rick, I thought he really put it in stark relief there and in a way that the American people will see during the general election. Do we trust government more to fix the dissatisfaction with healthcare finances that we have now? Or do we trust the market more, which means insurance companies and pharmaceutical companies, to set prices and policy? I mean, I don't think that's a slam dunk in this case for the market, as many other things are. I think that's going to be a really interesting debate next fall.
I totally agree with you. I think that's such an interesting fault line that's emerging between the Democrats and the Republicans. And you could go down the list, and there are differences certainly between what the Democrats are proposing, but they are talking about a pretty significant expansion of government's role in healthcare. Now, you can agree or disagree as to whether that's a good thing, and certainly these Republican candidates are going to disagree. You saw Mayor Giuliani come out with the healthcare plan in the last few weeks that it relies entirely on tax credits. There is no expansion of the government's role in it at all. And in fact, all of the candidates on stage yesterday disagreed with Iowa's senior Republican Senator Chuck Grassley, who wants to have a major expansion of the children's health insurance program that's run through the states, the S-CHIP program. President Bush is vetoing the bill that Congress is producing. And even though there are a number of Republicans, including Senator Grassley, who say, look, this is providing health care to poor kids. This is not pork barrel spending here. But certainly the people on stage were not cowed by Senator Grassley or by the perception that they're being mean to poor kids either. They're very comfortable in saying that government should not be the primary caregivers for people.
Let's take some phone calls. Mike in Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, hi, Brian. I think that I wanted to relate a conversation I had a month or two ago with some of the kind of folks that protest in front of abortion clinics. They were actually talking about the presidential campaign. And I asked some of them, because they were, you know, doing their standard expression of skepticism about Giuliani's social positions. And so I asked them the question, if it's Giuliani versus Hillary, who are you going to vote for? And there was, I mean, not a single one of them paused. They'd vote for Giuliani. And I think that illustrates a kind of a strategic issue that people aren't talking about, which is this is not going to be like the 2000 election where, while Republicans may not have wanted Al Gore to be president, or, you know, a number of them, they didn't really have strong objections to him.
Right.
Whereas this year...
So you think some of the Giuliani social issue positions get neutralized by the fact, by the strength of partisan feeling on
that,
other issues?
That's part of it. And part of it is that this year the dynamic on the Republican side will not just be pro whoever the Republicans run, but not wanting to see mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton as president.
You think it would be as strong if it was Obama or Edwards?
No, but in that case, then, particularly with Obama, well, with both of them, I mean, of those three, Hillary Clinton, I can at least picture being in the White House and being president. The other two just don't seem to have enough experience to do it.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. Well, Ruben Navarrete, that does leave one unanswered question, though, which is, what if Giuliani gets the nomination and he reaffirmed, you know, much clearly, more clearly than Romney did when he was dancing around it. Giuliani reaffirmed, I've been pro-choice on abortion. I am pro-choice on abortion. But what if there is a third party candidate, you know, a latter day Pat Buchanan or somebody like that who comes in to, you know, mess around with the field because it's such a strong issue. And if he's got the wrong position on guns, gays, and God, then there's an opening there.
Yeah, I don't buy that premise. I think the same thing could happen on the Democratic side. You could always have Ralph Nader, who just wants to be president,
we
wants
saw
to be a spoiler.
It twice.
Nobody's going to vote for Nader, but he comes forward anyway. He'll find one issue with which he disagrees with Hillary Clinton and say, okay, this is my candidacy. But that doesn't mean he's going to influence the election.
I don't know if there is such a Republican this year, but it could happen.
I think Rick is right, though. I think they want to beat Hillary. That's the primary goal. And I think this is where abortion goes to die this year, folks. I mean, this is going to stop being a defining issue this time around. People have had it with this issue. They just want to win.
We're going to continue in a minute with our two guests, and our phones are still open for registered Republicans. We'll take more of your phone calls. Republicans, if you are likely to vote in a Republican presidential primary, Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, as we play more clips from this ABC debate. WNYC. We are listening to clips from the Republican debate on ABC This Week with George Stephanopoulos yesterday and getting reaction from Republican listeners and two guests. Republicans, call us if you think you're likely to vote in the Republican presidential primaries next year. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. With us are Rick Klein, senior political reporter at ABC News, who writes their political newsletter, The Note, online, and Ruben Navarrete, Jr., syndicated columnist with the Washington Post Writers Group. Before the break, we played a montage of responses on health care. I want to play one more. This is Mitt Romney, who actually criticized Giuliani's free market health plan. It was one of the few actual policy disagreements that came up last night. Giuliani had proposed a tax deduction on up to $15,000 a year of medical costs to get people to take more personal responsibility for medical expenses. Here is part of Romney's response.
No, let me finish. Green light's on. Okay. They just turned it off. Leave it on. We have to have our citizens insured, and we're not going to do that by tax exemptions because the people that don't have insurance aren't paying taxes.
Thank you.
All right. First of all, Rick, did George give away a little insider information there?
About the lights?
Yeah, did he? Here's what I want to know. Did he really control the green light and red light and show it secretly to the candidate who was answering the question?
I wish I knew the answer to that, and I'm being totally honest with you. That's above my pay grade, right? I was in the debate hall, but I didn't have a view of the lights, so I couldn't tell who was blowing through them. But I did hear that that Romney did have a tendency to talk beyond the light throughout the debate.
That's what they were doing, it's kind of an interesting way to run a debate, because this wasn't a timed response debate like each candidate gets 30 seconds. It was more free form than that, but it seems like still George could signal them to stop without saying so in words. But what's your political analysis of that exchange that they had on health care, Giuliani and Romney?
This is one of the key issues in this race. We don't hear about it as much from the Republicans as we do from the Democrats, but it's particularly important for Mitt Romney, who built his legacy in Massachusetts in part on a universal health care plan that's just now going into effect. This is a distinction that Mitt Romney wants to draw. It puts him in a bit of an uncomfortable position among Republicans, in that he's the one that's advocating a bigger government role. But to the extent that he tries to pitch himself as the management type, the CEO type president, someone who comes in as an executive and finds common sense solutions that doesn't just, you know, knee-jerk say everything's about tax cuts, then I think this is a fairly effective argument. Now, I do think that this is the kind of thing, though, that makes the Club for Growth type and other fiscal conservatives say, wait a second, are you really talking about the expanding government's role in things? And honestly, he is. And he's not talking about...
Romney is with his Massachusetts plan.
He certainly... I mean, the government... He created the new bureaucratic agency in Massachusetts to manage health care.
And it's an interesting plan in that it puts a lot of... a little bit of burden on a lot of people. Each employer has to cover their workers or pay into a fund. Each uncovered individual has to buy insurance on the open market or face some kind of penalty. Plus, the government gives subsidies to low-income people who need to buy themselves on the open market but don't qualify for Medicaid. So there are many, many moving parts, but he tries to spread the burden around. But that does mean that there's a lot of government bureaucracy to oversee a lot of different camps.
That's exactly right. And really, he made this a major calling card of his time as governor. He really looked at all the issues, tried to find a solution that would work. It doesn't go as far as a lot of liberals would want. It has a lot of things that conservatives don't want. He thinks it's a middle-of-the-road sort of common-sense solution. But it does have individual mandates where people are required to get health care just like they're required to get car insurance, and employer mandates where you have to pay a penalty if you're an employer who decides not to provide health care to your workers.
Gary in Queens, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gary.
Hi. I was pleased to hear that several candidates understood that there are other institutions that support democracy other than voting. But one of them should have pointed out that voting does allow the population to empower itself and look inward towards domestic issues like safer streets and education. Because you recall in February, when the president was peppered with criticism, with questions from the press corps about challenging the efficacy of voting in Iraq, because many Iraqis didn't become Zionists overnight. There was some issue over there. And the president was flailing on that issue.
So you thought they de-emphasized voting too much in the responses yesterday. Gary, as a... go ahead. Did you want to answer that?
No, you're right. It's a matter of articulating the policy. And you saw in back in February, I remember there was a dual press conference with the president. I think it was some other national leader, and they were questioned by. I think it was Blair. Yeah, you saw that he couldn't. There was a question. The questioner was the NBC.
Gary, I'm going to move on from this point. As a Republican, who do you support today?
I would support Giuliani. Probably vote for him.
Do you like his health care plan so far? Do you care?
Yeah, in fact, I wrote an article on American Daily, a lengthy article on the health plan that comes closest to his. And so I have no problem with that.
Okay, thank you for your call. Pat in Massapequa, you're on WNYC. Hi, Pat.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Okay, and you?
Good. You're on with Rick and Ron, right?
Rick and Ruben.
Oh, I'm sorry. Rick and Ruben?
Yeah.
I didn't get their last names. Just curious.
Ruben Navarrete and Rick Klein, K-L-E-I-N.
Okay. All right. So this is representative of the Republican position?
Well, Ruben is, I would call, a centrist columnist, syndicated Washington Post writers group.
Right.
And Rick Klein is a nonpartisan political analyst for ABC News.
Oh, okay. All right. Not necessarily Republican, but centrist.
No,
and,
they're here as, right.
Okay. So
political analysts.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yeah, the reason I'm calling is I do find it interesting that we tend to try to coin a lot of phrases with guns, gays, and God, and you know we kind of just gloss over a lot of things. If we really look at it, I think we could say as far as the people in Iraq, yes, they should have peace. Should it be, you know, a Muslim peace, a Christian peace, a Jewish peace? No, all three are there. So I think certainly you have to respect that. As far as the religious beliefs, not of course militant belief, and that should stop. But I think it rather than just coining a lot of things.
With respect to the candidates, Pat, if I can just try to focus you a little bit.
Okay,
I don't know if you heard this debate or much of it. Did anybody take a position that particularly impressed you?
Well, actually, I didn't hear the debate last time. I did hear your clips, the montage, Brian. And I would say McCain, actually, I like best because I think he's the most honest. He's not flip-flopping. I think his abortion view is very good, and I think we kind of downplay that as if that's not an issue. I think Rick or Ruben has said that, but I think it really is, because we actually lose more babies every day in this country, over 3,000 a day, than we've lost in Iraq in 2 days in the past 4 years. So a lot of people, you know, they play, I've seen Jimmy Breslin do this, play up, well, 14 more bodies came home for effect, just to tear down our efforts over there. And it's terrible, because we're trying to help people. People over there want us there, by and large. And we are progressing, but we get a lot of the liberal media that turns it the other way, and try, I think, really just wants to pull out at any cost.
But do you think that the equation that McCain made in the clip that we played earlier, where he said if we outlaw abortion in this country, it will send a signal to the rest of the world that the United States has positive moral values and that will help us in foreign policy, do you think there is an actual practical world relationship there?
I do. I really do. I think that life is important. I mean, certainly you wanted to be born, I wanted to be born, right? We didn't want to be aborted. Isn't that true?
I don't think I had any opinion about it at the time.
Yeah, but I'm sure you're glad to be alive, right?
Right.
As well as Rick and Reuven there. So that's my point. I think people kind of say, well, because we don't see the child, well, then it's a nothing. But, you know, when people see a sonogram and they see an actual living being and they say, oh, well, you have a choice now. You can either let that baby live or kill it. What's your choice? Most times their choice is to let the baby live.
And Pat, I'm going to leave it there.
The world, a secure life for unborn children.
Pat, thank you very much. Here's an interesting Giuliani moment that we'll play Truth Squad on a little bit. Rudy.
The way to do it sometimes is to reduce taxes and raise more money. For example, I ran a city with 759 bridges, probably the most used bridges in the nation, some of the most used in the world. I was able to raise more money to fix those bridges by lowering taxes. I lowered income taxes by 25%. I was collecting 40% more from the lower income tax than from the higher income tax.
Now, help me out with this, Rick Klein. Giuliani did cut taxes, and I'll assume the revenue figure is accurate. Cut taxes by 25%, New York City income taxes in the 90s. Revenue went up by 40%. But that was the mid and late 90s when everything was booming, especially Wall Street in the tech bubble. President Clinton, remember, had just raised taxes at the federal level, and I'm not sure either tax change can be credited for the unprecedented economic boom that took place in those years with a lot of new tax revenues to government. Any thoughts?
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a key part of the Giuliani record, and it's going to be dissected further as the months go by. But, yes, he did inherit a deficit, and he did have at one time a pretty large surplus. It was almost entirely due to the economic boom that was nationwide. I mean, New York, as you know, Ryan, experienced huge, huge growth during the 1990s. And he benefited from that, as did a lot of cities in their coffers. He doesn't mention that he left office with a pretty significant deficit. Some of it had to do with 9/11, obviously, but budget experts you talk to in New York, a lot of them think that there would have been a billion-dollar-plus deficit that Mayor Bloomberg inherited, even if 9/11 had never happened, because of the dot-com bubble collapse. So basically, he was a good time to be mayor of New York, and not to take away from the true accomplishments and achievements he did have, his claims to, you know, to have created this economic miracle where tax cuts sparked an economic boom, I think, is overstated.
One more clip. On the Iraq war, except for Ron Paul, they all agreed the U.S. should stay in it to win it. And Romney got off this zinger that I guess he came in with against Barack Obama, who, as we mentioned earlier last week, called for negotiating with enemies of the U.S., in his first year with no preconditions, and then going into Pakistan if necessary to get Osama bin Laden if Pakistan knows where he is and won't do it themselves, Romney.
In 1 week, he went from saying he's going to sit down, you know, for tea with our enemies, but then he's going to bomb our allies. I mean, he's gone from Jane Fonda to Dr. Strangelove.
We're going to get
week.
To that.
But Reuven, funny enough, I'm not sure they actually disagreed with Obama on Pakistan.
Yeah, or they didn't have the guts to say so, because the alternative position is to say, you know what, if we had intelligence that Osama bin Laden or other al-Qaeda operatives, important people, were in Pakistan and the Pakistani government wasn't going after them, would we go? And I don't think most Republicans would stand up on a podium and say, well, you know, our allies, our friends, we probably wouldn't go in there. So I think in that respect, it's easy for Romney to sort of poke fun at that, but you're right. I don't think they disagree with that latter position at all, nor do I think they want to get drawn into a big conversation about exactly how good a friend Pakistan is or how good a friend Saudi Arabia is.
Although Romney did put it a little more delicately later on in a way that I thought was accurate and probably effective for people who are paying that close attention. He said Obama's problem was not the policy. Everybody would agree you keep it on the table for the United States to go get bin Laden themselves if they have to in a situation like that. But it's the way you put it in public. And
Brian, he should talk. I mean, as Romney's getting lessons about how he should put things in public, you know, he's massacred the English language on most of these issues, as you pointed out earlier. So it's again, Obama's the winner. I mean, the Obama camp's got to be happy this morning because the other side was talking about him.
Last thing, Rick Klein, before you go, I'm looking at your post on the note today. And one of the interesting things that jumped out to me there is that you said either former Governor Mike Huckabee or Senator Sam Brownback, but not both, could still matter in this race. Why do you think either of them could matter?
There is a core of the party that is very unhappy with the current field. They want a true social conservative. This is a significant factor in Iowa and will be in the caucuses. But there's not enough of them to go around to support two candidacies. So either they consolidate behind one or the other. And we saw this really interesting debate erupt in Iowa last week where not in Iowa, but across the country even, where a prominent supporter of Mike Huckabee was telling people that he knows, his friends and neighbors, that you shouldn't trust Sam Brownback because he's a Catholic. Created a big fight over the role of religion in the public sphere. But I think it speaks to the importance of both these candidates about reaching out to social conservatives, particularly religious conservatives. I did have the thought that a lot of the folks they were trying to reach were probably at church during the debate. We'll see at the straw poll next weekend if one or the other of them emerges as a clear consensus choice of social conservatives and, you know, maybe places in the top three or four, you may see the other one drop out and realize that it's just not going to happen for them because there's just not enough to go around. But I do think that this element, these are the same sort of folks who are looking at Fred Thompson and are wondering about him getting in. But if they want someone who's really solid on the conservative issues, it really has to be either Brownback or Huckabee.
Well, seculars do politics on Sunday morning. Christians go to church, but ABC News with George Stephanopoulos did this debate yesterday morning with the Republican candidates. Of course, Fred Thompson, not there yet, and he was kind of the ghost hovering over this entire affair. Rick Klein, senior political reporter at ABC News. Ruben Navarrete Jr., syndicated columnist with the Washington Post Group. Thanks so much to both of you for coming on and talking about it with us.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, Joe Biden, Democratic hopeful, will be among our guests tomorrow. And coming up in a minute, we'll have three Brooklyn bloggers to compare notes on why it's the bloggingest borough. And next hour, we will take calls from any one of you who attended the yearly Coast Conference for progressive bloggers and your impressions of the Democrats who showed up there this weekend. But Brooklyn bloggers next. Stay with us.